Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of Talking T20 with me, Daniel Norcross, deep in the bowels of Crick Info's HQ in a secret location in Hammersmith. I am joined today, for the first time this season, I am delighted to say, by the cricket correspondent of the Evening Standard, Will McPherson.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, it's a delight. It's a delight having you. I see you around the test matches, but it should not be gainsaid that your original expertise comes from the county game, and you're often to be seen doing your work at the Oval.
Unlike Adil Rashid, I am available in all formats for whichever county fancies picking me up. I haven't retired. I'm still very much available for county and England selections, so bring it on.
Well, so am I. I'm very much available for Surrey selection now that they've lost a number of players, Sam Curran and Ollie Pope. We'll talk more about that, but let's begin with an overview of what's happened in the Vitality T20 Blast this week. It's been the busiest week of the season so far, now that the county championship is completely out of the way. We've had 24 games in the T20 Blast this week, 13 in the South Group, 11 in the North Group. The big winners, you'd say, from the South Group, Glamorgan and Somerset, recording three victories this week. Surrey, Gloucestershire, Kent got two wins and a loss. Sussex, they'll be starting to get a bit edgy. We're going to talk in detail about them, their bowling attack, but is the batting too reliant on Laurie Evans? They've just had the one win and two losses. And then the three sides are propping up the table. Middlesex, Essex, both losing all three matches this week, and Hampshire losing both their games. Those three teams are falling off a cliff, and it's hard to see how, well, any of those three can get through. Into the North Group, 11 games in the North Group. Derbyshire, Yorkshire and Birmingham all 1-2 and lost 1. Durham and Notts 1-1 and lost 1. Leicestershire 1-1 and lost 2. Worcestershire, the big winners this week with 2 wins out of 2. North Hants, well, I don't know if there's much more that can be said about North Hants. 3 losses out of the 3 they've played. And Lancashire played only the one game. Any side this week to play only one game, Lancashire. So the North Group has actually started to get really concatenated. There's one side out the top there, Worcestershire. There's one side down the bottom, North Hants. Everyone else is vying for those other three promotion slots, you would think. But let us begin in the South Group, because to paraphrase Gary Lineker's quote about football, cricket is a game played by 22 players charging around after a ball, and at the end of it, Glamorgan win a T20 at the Oval. What is it? What is it about Glamorgan and playing at the Oval? They just absolutely love it there. Surrey would have been fairly pleased with 194 that they posted. And then Glamorgan knocked it off with an over to spare. Will, explain Glamorgan to me.
It's curious, isn't it? I don't know really what the story with Surrey is there and playing against Glamorgan. I don't know whether it's, they pride themselves on their big Friday nights, don't they? Sorry, this is a Tuesday. It was, it's slightly in the middle of the season. But one game at the Oval that doesn't sell quite as well. They have to have a game on a sort of slightly ugly day of a week, a Monday or a Tuesday. And that's the one they got this year. And they just weren't quite there, were they? With a ball in the field, Kieran Carlson struck the ball beautifully, didn't he? And he looks quite a prospect. And they do have a few, particularly in white ball cricket, a few young Welsh lads coming through and doing the business. And actually, it's a result that threw the table open again, because Surrey were fully on the charge, weren't they? And then they just were checked, but they've got two wins over the weekend as well.
So. You don't think it's some kind of druidic ceremony that happens the moment they go over the Severn Bridge and head towards the Oval? Because it happens all the time. I mean, we'll talk in more depth about Surrey, who have had a decent week, but Glamorgan...
It was without Ingram as well, that result.
Exactly.
Ingram wasn't there, and they've not got Marsh, they've not got... Kouadjian might have played in that game, I think, and now he's gone. But, they're big, big gun, Colin Ingram. He's won so many of those games. And he wasn't around.
It's Carlson, it's Wag. I mean, Wag every year does it. He does create chaos.
Well, Glamorgan have done it twice in the capital, actually, this week, haven't they? Because they went to Richmond yesterday to play Middlesex and made them look very, very silly.
Yes, that isn't the hardest thing to do, though, it has to be said, in T20. Middlesex floundering once again. Middlesex losing all three games. But just to zero in, just quickly, though, again, on Glamorgan. Kieran Carlson, you've mentioned, he got 40 off 22 balls yesterday on what all accounts is a pretty tricky surface at Richmond. He got 58 against Surrey. Craig Meshadair as well. They've got explosive hitting. You just, when you look at Glamorgan's lineup, it doesn't sort of fill you with terror.
No.
And yet, look, three wins out of three. I mean, it's catapulted them up to, what are they, fifth, that they're level with Surrey, and now no one's going to want to play them in that really bunched southern
six
group.
Six has got to go into four, and I think it is still six. I mean, Somerset are out up top, having won six of their last seven, but there's still enough jeopardy there, you think, with the two top teams have played 10, and then the next four have all played 9, so there's a bit of space, you'd think, for ups and downs yet. And Glamorgan are going to be right in the mix. I mean, they got to finals day last year, didn't they? I believe they got to finals day last year. I can say that with some confidence.
Well, I was at finals day, but it goes in such an extraordinary blur.
Yeah, you don't remember who was there the next day. I remember,
yeah,
because they have that sort of finals day. They've got that amazing nature where teams leave. You know, a team is gone by 1 o'clock.
Yeah,
so they're in the bar at 1 o'clock, and then the next team joins them at 5 o'clock. Say, and then the other two teams join them at midnight when they've completely finished. And so the teams who leave at one, I think that was Hampshire maybe last year. Hampshire and Glamorgan lost in the morning, and then
it gets messy.
Nottinghamshire were celebrating picking up the trophy at 11 o'clock at night. So
it's a messy and unusual day. So look, Glamorgan, the big winners this week. Somerset as well. You've mentioned Somerset, top of the table.
Somerset pulled off that. Well, they pulled off two remarkable wins this week. There was the Essex one, where Myberg scored 103 or 44, and they won by 10 wickets with 52 balls to spare, almost half their balls to spare.
Which could be really crucial, because in a group as tight as this, you do not know how important net run rate is going to be.
Especially with, so by normal standards, so few games getting rained off. Generally, everyone's dealing in 2-point, you know, it's not the shared point business, you know, it's... I think net run rate, if you can get a win like that, and that is an absolute shellacking, isn't it? 52 balls to spare, all 10 wickets in hand. And they made it. Somerset a really interesting team, because they suddenly look really settled. They've got, I mean, Craig Overton doesn't appear to be getting the side, but Jamie is bowling rockets, and then they've got Jerome Taylor in on a really random short term.
And that's really worked for him. He picked up 5 for 15 against Hampshire.
3 for in the next game, or three for in one of the games. And he's looking like a superb sign. He couldn't get a CPL gig, which is why they got him. CPL being his home.
That's extraordinary, business. Isn't it?
I mean, well, you'd think he might get one now. He's clearly in form. He's still got it.
Well, he's picked up 8 for 43 in 8 overs in those two games. I mean, you know, that is not bad against Hampshire. You know,
did you see, so the Hampshire, that Hampshire game again? It's another extraordinary scorecard. The Hampshire chase. You see the scorecard.
Dawson and Vince.
Vince got 70. Dawson got 80, and no one else got more than 8.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing. And just like the Hampshire, sorry to skip onto another team. They are really curious, because you look at their batting and you go, well, they've got around for the whole season. They've got Rousseau, Vince, Dawson, Northeast, Tom Allsop's very handy, and then Colin Munro. Until Rohit Sharma did it recently, the only bloke to have 3 international T20 hundreds. So they've got a properly explosive batting lineup, and yet there they are, down in 7th position, having won just 2 of their 9 games. You know, they should be absolutely flying. But,
well, yeah, let's focus on those sides that are failing, because I think it's safe to say that Somerset, Kent, Gloucestershire, Surrey, Glamorgan, Sussex, that this story is going to run and run. I don't think we're going to lose any of those six in the next week either. I think they could easily be taking points off each other. So let's look at that bottom three. And I'm going to start with Essex. I went to see them yesterday at Chelmsford for their game against Surrey. And I just could not understand their tactics. It was bizarre. They're down the bottom of the table. At the time, they had 4 points from 8 games. So they know, in essence, that they've got to win the last six.
All six, yeah.
You've got to win all six. But if you get 16 points, you will get through in all probability. So, faced with this conundrum, and up against a Surrey side that's packed with explosive batting, they currently go at 10.46 runs and over Surrey. It's the highest in the country. Second is Somerset. So, when you're playing Surrey, you know you're going to need a minimum of 180 to compete. Mm. You know, even with a really good bowling attack. At 90-odd for 4, after 13 overs, they send out to bat, or 90-odd for 3, I think it was, they sent out to bat Michael Pepper, a very worthy but orthodox batsman.
Mm.
They got Asher Zaidi left in the hutch. He came in with 2 overs to spare, got 24 off 8 balls. Now, the result was that, you know, Essex did not start actually looking for runs until the 20th over, which they took for 23, got 157, and never looked like winning the game. Now, what's going on at Essex that they're not...
That
you know, where's the urgency?
Yeah, and the sort of... foresight. It's quite interesting, you know, I know it's a Blast podcast, but on England played those T20s recently, and they put Joss Butler up the order. And the question was to Paul Farbrace, who was stepping in as coach, you know, you've got lots of guys who can open batting. Do you have anyone who can do what Butler can do with, say, eight balls at the end of the innings? And, you know, is that stat that's been doing rounds for years, and it's probably actually out of date, but a number seven in T20 faces an average of seven balls an innings. So that's not very many to make it.
Not to make it
an impact. The theory is that you have a player down there who can get 20, say, from those seven. But why not have a guy who can get 20 from seven, 30 seeing 21? This is far, and getting 60, say.
Yes,
this
exactly.
is Farbrace's theory. He thinks that that's rubbish. He thinks the finisher concept is a load of gubbins, basically. I mean, you should put your best batsman, get Joss Butler, for instance, facing as many balls as you possibly can. And that's the same situation with Zaidi, isn't it? He's the guy who can somehow, in really ugly fashion, swipe you 50 from 20, say, and get Essex up to a decent total. Instead, he's scratching around for eight balls, trying to see what he can scramble from that.
Well, I'll tell you why the finishing theory is nonsense. Because if you come in with five wickets down, and there are eight balls left to go, you're going to throw the bat at everything anyway. Mm. So, of course, they score more runs at the back end.
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen. It struck me as absolutely bizarre. It was like watching Essex sleepwalk out of the competition. I couldn't understand it.
Or just, you know, think they were in 2008 or something. You know, just so that T20 tactics have evolved so much. And, you know, just go hard. Why not? Just keep going.
I couldn't agree more. Now, you know, you've only got to look at their run rate. This year, they've been going at 8.13. Now, that's just, what is that? That, I think, is the lowest in the country. Yeah. 8.13 is the lowest scoring rate in the country. And it's partly because of the way they've arranged their side. Now, they don't have a bad side. I mean, I know Tendulkar's not necessarily the best of form, but give you another example of odd thinking. Ravi Bapara. If Vitushan Ehantharaj was here now, he would be reminding us of the great stat that he is the seventh leading run scorer in all forms of cricket in the last decade. And they're betting him down at five, sometimes six. He was at six for one game this week. Now, if you're in trouble, surely you put your leading run scorer and your most experienced player up near the top. I do not understand it.
Yeah, they just sort of, you look at an Essex scorecard in a moment, it just seems to be sort of random Essex cricketer generated, you know, just somebody somewhere, and there doesn't seem to be any real plan, and that is probably why they're even below Middlesex at the moment in the
You've segued game. Beautifully onto Middlesex. Okay, Middlesex. Now then, where do we start with them? They had a horrible, horrible outing against Surrey. Horrible not because they didn't perform. I mean, they did. 221. I mean, it's a very good wicket, don't get me wrong, but 221 looked good. Paul Sterling picks up 100. He's one of five players to get 100 this week. But, you know, at the end of that innings, I think they would have looked back and thought Sterling was on 4 off 11.
Mm.
And that's, in a way, what cost them getting to 240, 250. I mean, he batted fantastically after that. It seems insane to go after a guy for getting 100 and, what was it, 103
off... 53 balls, was it?
Something like that. 58 balls, I think. And yet, in a way, that was sort of pivotal, wasn't it? The slow start, with Surrey's explosive hitting, Surrey chased down 222 with 3.2 overs to spare.
16 overs. It's absolutely extraordinary hitting. I mean, I watched the opening game of both these two teams' campaign at Lord's. It would be a month ago now, wouldn't it? More than that.
Yep.
And Middlesex actually won a really tight game, and I thought, you know what, maybe they've got the makings of a team. They bowled a lot of spin. Agar hadn't quite arrived. Surrey were depleted. They had no Finch, Roy, all of that lot. Maddinson. But they still looked like they had an idea about how to do it. And then since then, admittedly, they've had a few injuries. They've had players going in and out to play for England, all that kind of stuff. And Bravo's gone. They're going to play the last four games without an overseas player at all, which is rare in any T20 anywhere.
And well, they won't need him now, they've only got 4 points from 10 games. So I think they're actually out of the competition. They can only get to 12 points. They are mathematically,
and in the end,
can't make it.
Save the money, you know.
Absolutely,
try and just do something else with that money. But at the same time, it doesn't reek of brilliant planning or anything like that, does it? And when you've got a specialist T20 coach, it all just looks very messy. And actually, Vittori, it sounds like he's got a third year on his contract next year. It sounds like he's going to stay for that, even though they're looking for another coach for the other formats. you'd think it would be a great opportunity just to have a fresh start and, you know, one person look after all three formats again. Because what tends to happen with coaching is you get your extremes, don't you? You go from Peter Moores, who has a reputation of being uptight, to Trevor Bayliss, who is the most relaxed man on the planet. And everything goes from one extreme to the next. And you'd think that having split the coaching, Middlesex would then go back to an all, when really all three formats are not functioning at the way they should be, you'd think they'd then go back to one coach looking after everything. It doesn't sound like that's going to be what happens. But fair play. It's up to them. It's not my...
They've traditionally been pretty rubbish at T20.
One good year ever, haven't they? 2008 is their...
And they play at Lords, and Lords is a place of tradition. So maybe they just didn't want to upset the apple cart.
Respecting the traditions of the game, boy.
We're going to finish off on Surrey. Before we do, I just want to shout out for Gloucestershire. I saw them against Sussex at Hove, and they are an extraordinary bowling attack. I mean, they really... I don't think a ball can have been bowled that was over 68 miles an hour all night, probably. Payne bowled within himself. The marvellous Kieran Nima Barnett, who wanders around like a slightly hungover bear after an excess of honey from the night before. Benny Howell with so many tricks and variations. And they held Sussex to a ridiculously, impossibly small total, 127 for 8 in 20 overs. It wasn't a great pitch. It didn't suit T20, it's got to be said. But they chased it down pretty easily, 129 for 6. They got there with a couple of overs to spare. They're a really underrated side. People look at people like Klinger, but actually it's that bowling attack that's so... It sucks the life out of you.
They pulled off a good win at Canterbury yesterday. You know, Kent are in the mixture as well, and they've pinned them back a little bit. And they've got Middlesex on Thursday, I believe, at Bristol, which, you know, that sounds like two points, doesn't it?
It does,
But they've got good top order, and completely unspectacular, all of it. Nothing in any of their armoury is desperately glamorous or anything like that, but they've just got a collection of what you might unfairly call bits and pieces players who do a job with both bat and ball, and then, as you say, they don't bowl quickly at all. They just change it up. And because actually, if you play at Bristol, if you play seven, you get, well, quite a few they play at Cheltenham as well, but if you play some of your games at Bristol, it is slightly odd dimensions, and you can get ridiculously high scoring, so you have to be really clever to, and you have to play on the fact that it is your home ground and strengthen your team perfectly to so that you exploit that. And then happy days.
One guy to look out for, I think I will tell you, Miles Hammond. He's a
Wally.
Bloke that
surely got to be called Wally.
Surely got to be called Wally. He's come back after taking a few years out to study architecture. Has returned back into the side, and he's like a kind of fourth gear Ed Pollock. He hits a long ball. He's not quite as explosive as Pollock, but he does inject much needed pace into Gloucestershire's top order, because Klinger tends to want to sort of hang around and people play around him. He's a guy to look out for. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see Gloucestershire at finals day. Sussex, on the other hand, the fact that they've got that fantastic bowling lineup, we've been saying throughout this season, they've got a bowling attack to die for, but their batting relies so heavily on Laurie Evans. He's scoring...
Which is surprising, you know, that... Yeah. You're a Surrey fan. You've seen Laurie, and he's done really well at Warwickshire for a few years. But, you know, he'd been a bit quiet for a couple of years, hadn't he? I mean, he's in his second year at Sussex, and I wouldn't have predicted him being, you know, one of the really prolific players in this year's Blast. But I think yesterday he got his fourth half-century of the competition, and they've played 9 games, so that's seriously good going in a format that fluctuates so much to be that consistent.
He was the only one who scored anything against Gloucestershire. He got a 96 this week, 96 against Somerset in a losing cause. But, you know, they need more batting than that. And that is an issue, regardless of how well Joffa Archer bowls. Hat-trick for him this week. One of the cheaper hat tricks you'll see.
Yeah, last over job, wasn't it? When the game was probably just about won already. But that in that game, Phil Salt, the opening batsman, he goes really hard, doesn't he? He goes at the top, and he's going to be a bit of a Pollock character in that he's going to get, 55 off 25, but he's also going to get four off two. You know, that kind of character. You'd wonder whether among that excellent bowling attack, there is some handy batting in the shape of Jordan or Joffre Archer or David Visa. You wonder whether it's worth getting one of them into the top four along with Evans, because to give it a real good slog, and just see what they can get out of that, and then have some slightly more sophisticated batting in the last five overs, say.
Well, their pitches need to suit them a bit better. I've got to say that the pitch I saw at Hove didn't suit their style of bowling, and it didn't suit anyone's style of batting. It played totally into Gloucester's hands. So that's something they'll need to address. Let's finish in the South Group with Surrey, simply because they are the most explosive and exciting side to watch at the moment. We've said 10.46 runs per over. This week, aside from the Finch and Roy show, the 194-run partnership in 13.5 overs, amazing. They had a power play that yielded 98, chasing 221. It was a lunatic day at the Oval. It was fantastic. Derby occasion, Surrey against Middlesex, 25,000 people there, ball flying to all parts. But this week hasn't really been about Finch and Roy necessarily for Surrey. It's been yesterday, for example, about Madison coming into form. He started quite slowly. Now starting to come into form. Unbeaten 49 yesterday, 70 earlier in the week. Ricky Clark doing it again. I'm sure George De Bell was very disappointed that Ricky Clark wasn't drafted into the test team in place of Ben Stokes. But, you know, well, in all seriousness.
Just to give George a moment of airtime, he did get Chris Wokes. So,
oh, he did, you know, yeah, he did, yeah.
To make George really happy, it would have been, it had to be Ricky Clark, not Joe. Ricky Clark in for David Milan, I think. And then George might rest easy and just leave us alone.
But I don't think he'll ever leave us alone until Ricky Clark retires. But he has been amazing, hasn't he? I mean, we're both bat and ball, because Surrey's traditional problem has been they've had three or four explosive hitters at the top of the order, and then the batting has slightly slowed down
towards the end.
Now you look at that top seven, and it just keeps coming at you.
Well, they are going to have to, presuming Ollie Pope makes his test debut on Thursday.
Well, I saw him.
It's only presuming.
I saw him this morning, and this isn't a scoop, but I said, have they told you whether you're playing? And he gave me a look which suggested that it was going to be very unlikely that he doesn't play. So yes, I think Surrey are going to have to plan without Pope.
So you assume that he's not going to be around. They've already had Sam Curran taken out of their side. They've got Tom Curran back, which is obviously a bonus. But that Pope has, as you know, that excellent article you wrote last week with him. He's good in that last sort of six or eight overs, trying to get, as you say, even if it's 15 off 10 or 25 off 18 or something, just keep things going. And Clark's good for that as well. And Sam Curran's not bad either. So a little bit more rest on Clark. I would imagine that Burns will come in for Pope, because he was in really good form at the top of the order earlier this year. And they'll probably just ask him to tee off from number five, say, after Folks. And that still looks pretty strong. Stoneman might, you know, he's still in the mix. Yep. So he's,
well, Will Jacks they've turned to lately. And, of course, he was the youngest Surrey man to get a 50 over.
100,
yeah. Exactly. So he hasn't had too much opportunity in T20 because the runs have been scored up the top. So I don't think they're panicking just yet, and their bowling resources are okay, because with Morkel doesn't look necessarily like the T20 bowler, but you know, he's not a bad replacement to have, is he?
No, not at all. I think they are their plans will be very much to keep him in shape for the run in for the championship.
Absolutely.
And Matt Pilans is essentially a specialist in this format. I mean, that, just to go back to that stand between Finch and Roy, because it does deserve a little bit of, you know, attention. There were 16 sixes in the innings, and that's, you know, they put that, that's one and over. Every single over that they used in that innings, they hit a six. Both openers are striking at more than 225, which is just extraordinary.
Good grief.
And as you said, 194 in 13.5 overs. Finch has scored 478 last runs this year. Bell's got 471, but Finch has played only seven games compared to Bell's 10. So it's amazing. They're absolutely, I mean, they need to, I know they're only on the edge of that top four.
First time this season they've crept into that top four. They're coming into just the right time. But
you fancy if they get in there,
they'll be hard to shift. Yeah. Only thing is, you've got to say, if they're going at 10.46 runs and over, it tells you that their bowlers are going at some. The bowlers are going at around 9.3. So,
well, Middlesex, you know, you walked off at half time in that game the other day. They'd put 2-2-1 on the board, as you said. Sterling got 100, and you're looking at some of the Surrey figures, and you know, Tom Curran was in the 40s, Pilans I think was in the 40s, and you're going, geez, they've got some work to do here, and then they've made it look so easy. But it's not going to be like that every time, is it? You can't. The way Finch particularly goes off, Roy's a bit more contained and controlled, even if he ends up with a higher strike rate.
Yeah.
Early doors, I think he plays a bit more correctly, but if you like. Whereas Finch just goes from ball one, and you can't come off every time, can you? So,
well, you can't. Anyway, they didn't just beat Middlesex this week. They beat the hapless Essex. So before we get too excited about Surrey's prospects, we should point out that it's the two sides in 8th and 9th in the table. But after that Essex game, I had the opportunity to catch up with their director of cricket, Alex Stewart.
So Alex Stewart, Surrey have won a game they really needed to win. It got a little bit scary at one point when the fourth wicket went down, but frankly, the bowling attack was too strong for Essex today.
Yeah, really impressed with our bowlers today. I say the last game against Middlesex, where they got a bit of tap on what was a very good wicket, wasn't ideal, but they bounced back exceptionally well. Small boundary, certainly this side, the pavilion side. So I thought the way they bowled, how intelligent their bowling was. We hardly got hit for a four or six onto the short boundary, which shows, say, good bowling intelligent. And then it was backed up by some good fielding. So yeah, they were probably under par by probably 20-25 runs, I'd suggest, Essex. Yeah, a little hiccup. We've been getting off to flyers with Finch and Roy. But it's nice that without those two really dominating, that we had others who came and made sure we won a game, which we had to win. It's such a tight group, this Southern group. Everyone's beating everyone. And really, until the last two stroke, three games, no places probably will be guaranteed. So it's important we keep trying to do what we can do, which is play good cricket and win, and then see where that leaves us.
Just a quick word on Ricky Clark, because you've alluded to the fact that Surrey have recently been getting a lot of their runs at the top of the order, but Ricky Clark's always been there this season to bail you out of trouble. He does it with ball, he does it with bat. I'm amazed that no one's even suggested he replaced Ben Stokes in the Lords Test match. He just seems to be Superman this year.
He is. Listen, he's such a fine cricketer. You know, when I was still playing all those years ago, he was just starting. It was obvious to me then what a fine talent he was. Pity he left Surrey, but he's now come back to his roots. And he's been brilliant for us, with bat, with ball, the way he catches, the way he is in the field, but also the knowledge he passes on to the youngsters. Every team meeting, he's got good advice for the group. And he's just been excellent. So as long as he can maintain that, then he's great value to us. He enjoys it here. We enjoy having him here. But it's great that all his hard work is now being rewarded with good performances with both bat and ball.
Lastly, and I know your focus is on Surrey, but it is a competitive group, the South Group. Just give us an idea of the teams you think are going to be the ones ultimately battling it out for those top slots.
Well, you just look at the top six. You know, it's that tight. That is the thing. Everyone is beating everyone. As we're talking now, other games haven't finished. So it really is who's going to slip up and miss out, as against, if you keep winning, then you're obviously going to stay in. But because that top six now are so tight, they're good teams, we've got to play most of them as well. So it is in our destiny, how we play and whether we progress or not. We missed out last year, which was hugely disappointing. 2 years ago, sorry, we missed out. Last year we lost in that quarter-final, whereas we've got to make sure this year that we qualify. It'd be nice to have a home quarter-final, but most importantly, we've got to get out the group to then progress. But it's easier said than done, as I say, because there are so many evenly matched teams. Certain sides you think they must slip up aren't slipping up.
Congratulations, another great win. Two more wins would probably take you to the quarter-finals, I'd imagine, but you'll still be eyeing up that home quarter.
Yeah, that's the idea. I say the Keir Oval is a great place to play. But yeah, if you're telling me two wins, I'll take it. I think it may be more, but let's see if it is two wins. But first up, we've got to get the first win, then we'll get a second win. But the lads, as I say, play some good cricket. We've had a couple of losses which are down to poor play. But if we're consistent throughout the full 20 overs in both innings, we'll beat most sides.
So there you have it. That was a very understandably happy Alex Stewart eyeing up a home draw in the quarterfinals of the T20s. There are roughly, for most teams, four games left. For some teams, five games left. It's getting to a very frenetic period in the group stage. We've looked at the South Group. The North Group had fewer games this week. And as I said earlier, it's been a very, very good week for Derbyshire, Yorkshire, Birmingham and Worcestershire. Notwithstanding the first three of those sides lost a game as well as winning a couple, for Worcestershire, let's focus on them. Top of the table, they're top by 3 points. Durham, we've got a game in hand on them in second place, have 12 points from 9. Worcestershire have 15 from 10. They might even qualify with 15 points. Sides have done that in the past, but they do know now one more win out of four games, and they're definitely through. They've shown really good white ball form in both formats this summer.
They're just such a likeable club, Worcestershire, aren't they? They do so much right. They've got a lot of players coming through their own system, and they've actually got a bit lucky with England over the last couple of weeks, because Pope, we mentioned, getting the call up, Clark is Joe Clark has missed out because of that, so he's going to be with them for, he's not going to miss any more cricket. Moeen Ali is only, he missed out on the first test selection, he's, you know, he's only a maybe to play in the second test, so they might have him back this weekend as well. So they're, you know, they're just a really good looking side. They've, what they've done actually, they lost both their overseas players in one fell swoop. They lost Travis Head to Australia and Martin Guptill to the CPL, but they got Callum Ferguson back in, and he's immediately gone and scored his first.
You love him, don't you?
I think somebody, and I hope it's Worcestershire, but somebody should sign him up next year just to be an all-format, all-season overseas pro. Because they're the best ones, aren't they? The ones play everything. And like in the days when Klinger would do the whole season with Gloucestershire, uninterrupted, he's meant to be a great bloke. He is good in all three formats. He's, you know, you'd think of him more as a, you know, sort of first-class player, but he, as he's shown, he might not be like a total Big Bash regular, but he can really do the business in T20. I watched some of that innings on, what would it have been, Saturday night, the Worcestershire versus their game at Trent Bridge, where actually they got off to a really slow start. They had something like 9 from 3 overs, 9 for 1 because Clark had gone, and then Moeen and Ferguson just took their time, and then they teed off, and both, you know, Moeen got 65 and Ferguson got 100, so, and it was a really formidable score at a difficult place to go. So
now Moeen could be a loss. I mean, we've got to keep an eye on whether he's selected for England. They've let him go when he's not been playing.
Yeah, he'll go back. England, there's a bit more enlightenment on that front now than there has been before, I think, about releasing players as soon as they know. So both Moeen and Porter didn't get in the England side on Wednesday last week, but were playing for their counties on Thursday, which is really good, I think.
It is. You just wonder at Lords whether that selectors might be tempted to use Moeen, in which case that is a bit of a loss because he's featured with both bat and ball this week. Wayne Parnell as well. Interesting signing.
Yeah, well, their seam stocks have been hit hard, you've got to remember, this year, haven't they? So while they set up originally with a couple of top order guys, they've had to turn to a lot of young kids. That guy, you know, that lad Pennington's come onto the scene and done really well. Pat Brown, another of George LaBelle's favourites, is doing well. Josh Tongue's been injured. I think he's claiming close to a comeback. Charlie Morris as well. Jack Chantry yet to retire. So actually a little bit more senior ballast, if you like, to the bowling's not a bad idea. They had to get Luke Wood in on loan, and then Andy Carter has popped up there now, so they're, you know, he's been around the traps and back, so I think just a bit of experience from Parnell won't go amiss, and he can hit it down the order as well.
He can hit it. Just a quick shout out for my favourite disastrous spell of the week award, though, which I'm just going to put this one in there now since we're talking about Worcestershire. It's poor old Ed Barnard.
Oh, what a cricketer he is as well.
A wonderful cricketer. He's had a great, great summer, so I feel bad raising it. But I'm afraid figures of 2 overs, no maidens, none for 41 shine out at me like a beautiful beacon from a scorecard.
Well, it happens to even the best cricketers.
Even the very
T20's best. T20's a cruel mistress. And
chin up, Ed.
He'll get over it.
You'll be fine. I think actually he was absolutely fine the next time he played.
Every time he plays on Sky,
were, but they were much better.
Every time he plays on Sky, by the way, there's some really fruity pronunciations of what, to me, seems a very simple surname to say.
Ed Barnard. Oh, is it Bernard?
Bernard.
Bernard.
There's a bit of sort of Bernard. Yeah, either American or European twist on his surname, which the Sky team, I don't know whether it's like a running joke between them or something, but it looks to me as simple as anything. But maybe when Charlie Morris comes back, he'll be Charlie Maurice or something. I don't know. It's really,
I won't put it past him. It sounds like a kind of Rob Key, Nick Knight badinage.
Yeah,
going
exactly.
On there.
Who knows?
So that's Worcestershire, top of the table, riding high, with a good net run rate as well. So I'm going to stick my neck out, not very far, and say they're qualifying.
Yeah.
Close in behind them, though, Durham continue to confound and surprise. They only won one, lost one this week, but that's all they really need to do. They got 12
points
from 9 games.
Tournament, and you're fine, aren't you?
Well, they've got 5 games left. They'll be thinking, we win 2 out of 5, we'll qualify. We win 3 out of 5, we've probably got ourselves a home draw. Mm. And that is a tremendous effort, isn't it, from Durham? Because
we all know the story.
We all know the story. Imran Tahir, though, leaves.
He's gone.
And he took 4 for 16 this week in our perennial series of leggy watch. We'll go through some more of them later on the programme, but 4 for 16 from Tahir, and then he's gone. And he went with fulsome praise for Durham. He clearly loved
it
down there.
And indeed,
a blaze of glory. We've got to be really clear, it was Northants they beat this week, and beating Northants, I'm at the moment fairly convinced that my club's first 11 has a decent chance against Northants. Bowl them out for 95. They did then proceed to lose to top of the table Worcestershire. So they face the top, they face the bottom.
That's a decent return for the week, fine. Isn't it? Yeah.
It's okay. And they'll just be thinking, win two more, eye up three more. I don't know what to put it down to. I suppose guts, team spirit.
Gutsy, but they've also got some really quite handy players, haven't they? Someone like Graham Clark has been opening the batting this year, and he's, you know, he's a big hitter. He's one of, I was given a pop quiz the other day, actually. Somebody said, how many, there are seven brothers in the county championship at the moment, or playing county cricket at the moment.
Oh.
Graham and Jordan are obviously one of those.
Yeah.
The Currans and the Overtons and the Roots.
Yes, yes.
The Taylors at Gloucestershire brothers.
Yes, I saw them involved in a very hilarious mix-up that resulted in the loss of a match.
Yeah, and one replaced the other yesterday in the team as well, which I always think was
Jack.
A little... Jack went out, and I think Matt came in.
Oh.
Jack had concussion, possibly. Two good T20 spinners, Callum Parkinson of Leicestershire and Matt Parkinson of Lancashire, whose form we'll come to talk about in a moment, no doubt. And then the Coughlins, Paul and Josh of... Paul was at Durham last year, of course, but now is at Nottinghamshire. He's been injured all year. He had a badly dislocated shoulder, I think, on a Lions tour earlier in the year. And then two who was another set of brothers, which are slightly suspect at the moment because no one quite knows what one of them's up to. I think he's on the staff at Sussex, but I don't know whether he actually is. The Robsons. Angus
of
and
course,
Sam.
Angus.
Is Angus on the staff? I'm not 100% sure. But that, there's all your brothers. There's lots of brothers there.
There's a lot. That's
quite a good
that's
going,
more
isn't
brothers
it?
There than before. You've done very well to name them all. I'm hugely impressed.
On the tip of my tongue.
Now we just need to find seven brides for these 14 brothers, or however that works. Right. Durham we've covered off. Yorkshire continue to compete, but...
They're curious, aren't they?
They're a curious side, and they're in a curious setup at the moment. The news that's been filtering out is that Adil Rashid wants out of Yorkshire, that Liam Plunkett's definitely going to Surrey, that Jack Brooks could well be leaving Yorkshire.
Mm.
Has that been confirmed?
I don't think
yet?
That's definite.
I don't think it's definite, but...
As you'd expect with a first-class bowler of his quality, there is a lot of interest. I think George wrote the other day from Somerset particularly.
So is this just the natural next phase for Yorkshire? They've had a sort of indifferent couple of years since they nearly won their third title running in that extraordinary end in 2016. They've just been a little bit flatlining the last couple of years since Jason Gillespie left. Are they now looking to sort of rebuild with a new squad of players?
I think so. I think what tends to happen when you enjoy great success is that you often hand out contracts that are slightly too long, possibly, and players are then... So, you know, they're the captain when they... lost that amazing finale of the season has been their coach for nearly 2 years, so you know it suggests that there should be quite a lot of turnover, shouldn't there, by then, and I think it's naturally happening now. So I think you'd expect Plunkett's already off, we've got that confirmed, but I would expect Jack Brooks to leave. Rashid is, I mean, I think it's irreparable. Alex Lees, someone like that, he's really, you know, he's just not, he's barely in the team, so he, for his own sake as well as, you know, them picking the team, he's probably got to go. So I would suggest there will be quite a lot of turnover at Yorkshire this close season.
They may well miss Jack Brooks. He took 3 for 23 against Leicestershire this week. Their wins, we keep on saying it, they beat North Hants. Everybody beats North Hants, poor North Hants, very comfortably by 6 wickets, a 50 for Kane Williamson. But that victory over Leicestershire could prove to be the way more important, because that's opened up a 4-point lead over Leicestershire, and it was a 4-point swing. If Leicestershire had won that, they'd be level on points. I feel a bit for Leicestershire because they sort of get nearly there and then they sort of get rowed back. Do you know what I mean? They've had a little bit of that in the county championship as well. Mm. Threatening.
They win a thriller and then they lose a thriller.
And then they lose
a
thriller, yeah.
But they'll work it out. They're going nicely as a club.
It's a decent season for Leicestershire, isn't it? Yeah. You'd have to say. Where should we go next? Derbyshire. Derbyshire's bowling. They have come, Derbyshire, from the pits of the table.
Lost it was their first four, didn't they? Then 1-5, and then now they've obviously levelled off again a little bit and lost one. But
they and North Hants were the bottom scrapers of that division. But Derby won two games this week, which keeps them up in the mix. They're fifth. They're 1 point behind Lancashire in fourth.
Yeah, they're going to be right
to
in
me,
contention.
It's that bowling attack.
You spoke about it last week, didn't you? They've got
fruition.
A lot of pace.
It's good.
And they've got, you know, they've just got a sort of this really randomly thrown together from across the globe. They've got a Kiwi, they've got a Colpack South African, they've got a Colpack West Indian, they've got...
But you know, they've really got the one that we never talk about. They've got Alex Hughes.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, he has been fantastic. This week he's picked up a two wickets, a three wickets. He doesn't go for much more than 30. I know, you know, there's Wahab Riaz scoring 50s at number three, doing the sort of thing.
It's strange, that, isn't it? I mean, yeah, how they made that work.
But that's what you're suggesting for Jofra and Chris Jordan at Sussex. And it works, doesn't it?
Just go out and give it a bash. Just don't worry. And they've promoted Villiers a couple of times, I think, into the top five. They're just clever. They've got some canny ideas, and they're making the best of what, on the surface of it, looks like one of the more peculiar and, you know, for want of a better word, average squads in the tournament, and actually they're right in contention to qualify.
Well, they beat Birmingham, which was a really important result for them. It means that Birmingham stay in 7th with 9 points, Leicestershire in 8th with 8 points. We've discounted Northants altogether. We're not really going to talk about their plight anymore because it's too miserable. Notts are in 6th on 10, Derby in 5th on 10, Lancashire only played the one game this week, have 11 points from 9, then Yorkshire 12 points from 10, Durham 12 points from 9, Worcestershire at the top 15 from 10. This is going to be a big week in the shake-up, you'd think, for the North group. I don't know where you're seeing that going. It's so hard, isn't it? There are so many teams
especially in the South group, where everyone's in it together. Worcestershire look like they've pulled away, don't they? They just need one win from four games, or even one tie or no result, and you'd probably fancy them to get through.
They're the fastest scorers in the division as well. Yeah, exactly. Important to point out.
They're looking really well set. There's seven or eight counties you'd say who could make up the last three spots, and that's going to be really tight.
Lancashire could well miss Liam Livingstone. Well, they will miss him because he won't be playing, but it's how badly they do miss him.
Yeah, they've made some interesting signings, haven't they? They've signed the Scottish spinner Mark Watt,
yes. Saw him up in Edinburgh.
The victorious Scots, and that's worked well for Derbyshire so far, so maybe it'll rub off on Lancashire. And you know, they as you said, they've had a quiet week of it, but they not look at them. They've got Hales back. I know he didn't get off to a great start in his return, but you'd think if he performed well in two of their four games, then they'd be right amongst it.
You'd say 15 points is going to be required, and a problem there is that Derby and Notts, therefore, unless rain comes around, are going to need to win three out of four. You would think so. Yeah. We do start to get to the sharp end now. If you look out for Derbyshire, look out for Notts, look out for Birmingham. If they lose a match at any point here, then they're supping in the last chance saloon, let's put it that way, or at least binge drinking, innit? the ones who have fallen out of the last chance saloon, you'd say, in the tournament, Hampshire, Middlesex, Essex and Northants. So, let's just wrap up today with our leggy watch. Ish Sodhi, 4 for 17 and 1 for 36. Joe Denley's picked up a 2 for 24 and a 2 for 17.
And he scored 99 this week. Not out, 99 not
is
out.
He the most valuable player?
He's probably the best player in the whole competition, I think.
Do you think?
Yeah.
He feels like it, doesn't he?
He is so good. And that was going to be...
Attack of the vapours, Will.
He's got loads of hundreds in this format. So the 99 not out wasn't a problem. It's just you walk off and totally relaxed about it. Whereas, you know, if you're someone like, we mentioned Callum Ferguson scoring his first T20 100 this week, even though he's a bit of a veteran, if he'd got 99 not out, he would have probably been a bit annoyed. But Denley knows there's another one around the corner in a couple of weeks. Next time he goes to the Oval, probably, he's got 100 waiting for him, so that's fine.
I got to see Rashid Khan in the flesh for the first time. What a bowler he is.
Lovely.
On a slow pitch at Hove. Took 2 for 14. There were Afghans in the crowd, plenty of them.
I saw that game. They were getting, you know, there was a lot of community engagement going on. Yeah.
But I tell you the thing that I didn't realise from watching on the TV is the pace he bowls.
Oh, it's rapid, isn't it?
He is quick. Honestly, you wouldn't be that keen on facing him in a club game. He's a quick bowler, but wow.
2 years ago when the Lions went to the UAE to play they played a four-dayer against Afghanistan, and they were just like, wow, this guy's bowling 64 mile per hour googlies that we can't pick.
You can't pick him. I was on commentary and there was no way. I had no way of telling which way it was going. Yeah, well, you have to just watch the ball and see where it goes in the end is your only way of telling. It's terrific spectacle. I mean, he is the real deal, isn't he?
I wonder if there's a possibility of him playing some first class cricket at the end of the summer.
Oh.
Because he's signed on to stay for the whole tournament with Sussex, and
right, and that's the 15th of September is the T20 finals.
Yep. He's not going to the CPL, so you'd think that why not play a few 4 days, and because he would want that experience, because his first test for Afghanistan, having not played very much first class cricket, obviously didn't go very well. So you know, you'd think he knows he's going to play more tests, so you'd think he'd want a bit of red ball practice, so maybe there's an opportunity there.
Well, that would be exciting. Adam Zampa, I mean, partly because he's playing for Essex, I think the general mood at Essex is not particularly dynamic. He's probably been the least successful of our leggies. 2 for 31, none for 29 in 2, mm-hmm. and a 1 for 35 yesterday in 3.3. He's not bowling badly,
no.
But so much depends on him in Essex's lineup that you just think it's a bit too much.
He looks like the only sort of a real T20 specialist bowler in that lineup, and that's tough going, isn't it?
Max Waller.
Oh, he's a cracker, isn't he?
Isn't he? Well, apart from the fact that, you know, he's called Max Waller, which I just find hilarious, owing to the comedian of the 50s and 60s. 2 for 24 from him, we've seen this week. They just continue to impress, these leggies. What it is about the leggies that gets me is that they pick up wickets and they don't go for many runs. So it's not as if players have decided, right, we're going to see them off. Mm. Or they've decided, right, we're going to thrash it to all parts, and they're buying wickets. They're actually taking wickets faster than anyone else and going for fewer runs.
Yep.
It's bizarre.
You know, on their day, there's no one more effective in the competition as well, or in T20 cricket generally, because, you know, when teams go after them, they get in trouble, and when they don't go after them, they get in trouble. So, there's no winning.
And poor old Yorkshire, of course, have lost their leggy in Adil Rashid. So, I don't know whether the pitches are going to turn in test matches, but leg spinners are doing the business in the T20. Now, our last segment is Disastrous Spell of the Week. I gave you mine. Ed Barnard's 2 overs, none for 41. I've got a few that you
Fuller,
might want to
Fuller,
chase
on. Fuller at the Oval on Friday night was a little bit watch through your hands, wasn't it? I mean, he batted quite nicely, but then he got he got 1 for 56. He did get Roy's wicket eventually, but that was pretty heavy going. David Visa, none for 52. And Fuller did it again, of course, in the Glamorgan game yesterday. So maybe he takes the prize this week just for combined figures of 6 overs, you know, 85.
6 overs, yeah. 1 for 85.
So 85.
Okay, Ed Barnard is spared.
Sorry, James Fuller.
James Fuller gets the prize this week. 6 overs, 1 for 85 in 2 combined matches. This week coming up, any particular fixtures that spring out at you? Any games you think that we're going to be having to keep our eye on? Ones that might actually decide the fate?
Well, there's the Gloucestershire, the one at Bristol on Thursday that I mentioned, between Gloucestershire and Middlesex, which looks, you know, that will... Middlesex are out, but Gloucestershire, that looks like 2 very, very possible points for them, and that would propel them to... Where, you know, they
get them to 15.
Ten games, they go above Somerset and Kent, so they would be, you know, right in shape then, you'd think.
And in the North Group,
on Thursday there's a Roses match, and then before that, Lancashire. We said they'd had a quiet week this week, but they've got a busy week this time. They've got Durham tomorrow.
Huge. Durham in second, Lancashire, of course, in fourth.
And then they've got Yorkshire on Friday at Headingley, so that looks like a massive few days in their campaign. Lancashire, they're fourth at the moment, having played just 9 games. If they could win both of those against the 2 teams directly above them, then, you know, you'd think they're getting very close to joining Worcestershire in the last 4.
Conversely, lose both of those and they might slip out of contention. I'm really looking forward to this week. I love it when we get to the sharp end. This time next week we may have teams that have definitely qualified. We will certainly have probably one team that has their demise confirmed, you would think, in the form of Hampshire, to go with Middlesex, Essex and Northants. Until next Monday, huge thank you to Will McPherson and the Evening Standard for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
And for me, Daniel Norcross, goodbye.